shells on the shore dissolve into flow. Emma Cinema.
It's the end of all we've ever known.
I thought it's safety, but it held me small and totally alone.
Now it washes away.
Of our day, in communion of our water, we are free, dreaming on to be.
Wash away what you never were. Let it come what you need to be. You're free.
Okay, so. Hello, Owen.
Hello, Karina.
Yeah, it's lovely having you. I'm really curious about this conversation that we are going to have today. And
me too.
Yes, yeah. After our chat about your life story, really, that you shared with me, which was really amazing, I fear there are a lot of things to talk about that people will be interested in. So I think we will go into changes from a mindset of poverty to starting to experience abundance, the role that money plays in that, the role that dreams play in all of this, spontaneity, openness. So I feel there's a lot to explore. And how do you feel?
I feel good. My mind's completely blank. Just see what happens.
Yeah, that's part of the spontaneity.
Yeah, I had an idea that maybe I could prepare some things in my mind first, but it's just they would disappear the moment that I started anyway. And half of the fun is just to see what happens, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Which I guess is how I'm leading my life as well. I have no idea what's going to happen. I just
it's very relatable. Yes, wonderful. Well, then let's jump in there. And you told me when we chatted before, essentially, that you grew up with a mindset of poverty. And I like the idea of starting there because I think it's also relatable for a lot of people. But even if not, it draws the transformation, or it outlines the transformation from feeling a strong dependency on money, because money seems to determine what we can choose in our lives. It seems to determine the broadness of possibility that we have. Mm. So maybe something else that is also possible. So let's start in the beginning. And I'm wondering, with that mindset of poverty that I think was a characteristic of your family in general, as far as I understand, it was more or less passed on to you. Like, yeah, what was it like? Maybe you can speak a bit more about that, and how was that reflected in your choices?
Well, I never thought of it as a mindset of poverty until much later, and I still don't actually think of it as that. I don't go around thinking of the words, you know. What was definitely the case was that in my teenage years, when my dad wasn't around, there wasn't much money going around, and there was the mindset that, of course, everyone has to some degree, or nearly everyone, of basically, you can't. You know, the options and things are blocked off. And I guess that's the real poverty that is endemic, regardless of how much money a lot of people have. Because in a way, thinking about how much money I had or whatever, or did not have, is still tied up in that poverty mindset, and it feels almost irrelevant to me. What was relevant and real was the feeling that it's just everywhere of, oh no, I can't do that. You know, that's too much money, or you know, that there's just doorways are closed to you. And it can seem that way so much because within that false labyrinth of images, it seems that way. And that seems to be how the rule of how the game. But of course, we're more than that.
Yes, yes, I like that statement, absolutely. And how do you feel or when did that when did those beliefs fall away that our possibilities are predominantly determined by money, that we can't if we don't have enough of it? When how did that unfold?
It's gradual. It's day by day. In a way that is barely detectable, except over time. There was a slow change of quite a few years ago when I encountered my spiritual path, because there I encountered a place that was not functioning through money, and still everything arrived to this place. You know, these people took a vow of poverty. They were forbidden from even touching coins. And yet, through the depth of what they gave to people around them, they first of all started to have everything they need gradually after years of pretty much literal poverty, you know, living off sugar beetroots or whatever in the ground. But they gave everything that they did, and so things were coming back to them. But that's only part of it. It was amazing to witness them. That's why I talk about it as being a gradual opening, because this doesn't feel like much of the picture to me now, but it was back then. Because these people initially would wake up with like icicles on them, because there was no heating in this cold, wet valley that they lived in, all in a caravan together. And yet, 40 years later, they have huge temples, they have a hospice where they give free healthcare to local people. They're the largest supplier of food aid in Europe, because they were given so much food by the Hindu community that they ended up giving it all back, and even sending some of it back to places like India, this high-quality rice which the people growing it can't afford to eat. So that was a pretty amazing example of that. And through going to that place, I met people who had a lot of trust in life. But this is all on the outside, but it was already a change to everything I knew in the ordinary society. And concurrently to this, and it's probably very important, because of course I was going to that place because it was seemed to be spiritually genuine, and was not based on money. I couldn't go to the places that had money. I didn't feel like I could. It was too expensive. And this place seemed to be living those principles. And whilst I was going to that place, I was, of course, finding out more what it meant to connect inwards to myself. I was also, of course, getting enmeshed in that spiritual pathway, but that's a different thing for now. I did, through that place, reach a point within myself where everything started to just automatically correct itself. I just didn't necessarily know what that was initially.
Yeah.
Because, you know, half the time they say that's your real nature, but then they impose some other thing on it and say, you get to it through this way, or you get to it through the grace of some deity, or all this kind of thing. But already connecting to that space within, I noticed changes within my life, because there's a point within inside us where you turn the tides of energy.
Yes.
And maybe coincidence or not, around that time, for example, people started giving me musical instruments. I'm a musician, you know, and I love to play pretty much anything. And if someone hands me an instrument, I figure it out and start to play it quite quickly, because I just love to do it. Those systems I understand, and they're so fun. And people started giving me instruments. I guess if people do know of me beforehand, it's as a harpist. And the harp was an example of that, something I never would have been able to afford with my bank account. And yet someone basically gave it to me one day. Someone very important in my life, a friend who I met at that monastery.
Yeah.
She had almost no possessions, but she trusted in life. She'd given away most of what she had around the time that I knew her, and lived very simply, and yet she had a harp that she didn't play. And I came and started playing it. And one day she made me a key to her house and said, come and busk with the harp whenever you like. And it was the perfect place in which to do it because it's Wells, this little tiny medieval English town, which people come and visit because it's so peaceful and tranquil and picturesque. And so I just really fitted into my environment there. And I had so much fun playing the harp that I didn't feel anything strange about going out to play in public.
Yeah.
In that place where there was the water. And one day I'm playing it and this friend of mine tells me, look, the harp was never mine, it's yours. And I didn't really know what to say about it, apart from obviously eventually, thank you, once I could accept the gift. It was like, it came to me and I started playing it and it just became, it changed my life and it flowed with it. It became the raft upon which I was sailing along the river.
Yeah.
That's what I mean, that it's gradual, because I still had a lot of concepts of poverty back then. But I felt so happy to have been arriving from a place of real inner deprivation, a mindset of, you know, that everything's blocked, because everything, most avenues were blocked in my life. Never mind financially, you know, I couldn't seem to find a job that I liked, friends and relationships, nothing was really working out. I had all these ideas of recording music, but it wasn't coming together. And yet, through playing the harp in the streets, it was not a major earning, but suddenly there was, I was supporting myself doing something I loved.
Yes, that's
so. Major supporting myself, but it was major for me because suddenly I felt like I had a role. What were you going to say?
I was just, I got excited about it and I was putting myself in your place and I was getting this feeling of sovereignty, you know, when finally you have an instrument that you can take in your hand and you can literally take your life in your hands and you can go out there and play. And of course, how people react to it is not so much in your hands, but you can start to trust life a little bit because of what you just described had come your way. So it seems very beautiful.
It was extremely beautiful. And it was beautiful playing in that place. Connecting the music to the environment unfolded something within me. Whenever I used to play music, even as a child, sometimes if I got really in the zone, I'd have visions of beautiful places in nature, like blue rolling hills against a turquoise sea or whatever, I'd get these little visions. And sometimes it wouldn't even be visual, but it would be something on the tip of my senses that I could perceive but not quite perceive. And it was flowing through the music. And I never knew what that was back then. I still don't entirely know what it is, except I call it dreaming. But it was amazing to then get into that zone. Just in ordinary public spaces, I had already started to express this with other people in the ashram, because it was a mainly Hindu devotional place.
Yeah.
Multi-religion, actually. I got to compose a mass there once, which was fun back at the time. But it was mainly very fiery, very Hindu, very kind of not this kind of new age, insipid kind of Hinduism. It was really very fiery. And because of that, I got to really sing like I'd never sung before. And I loved singing in the North Indian manner, Hindustani music. And people would say, I would feel like I was flying. Sometimes you would have 800 people arrive for one ritual, you know, yes, one celebration. And you would have 800 people singing in call and response with you leading the song.
Wow.
And I've not encountered that kind of feeling quite so strongly in other places since. But it allowed me to express this musicality within me in a way that people really responded to and seemed to even help them. And that was amazing to me, because it had always been my, you know, therapy. But for other people to come and say this, sometimes people with whom I couldn't even share a verbal language, it was incredible.
Yeah.
But that was within the very obvious context of a system, of a, you know, of a monastery or whatever. And so it wasn't quite sovereignty. It was discovering something within me. But to then later be playing harp on the streets, and to be welcome there as well, to just feel like I could just turn up when I liked, sit down and play, and suddenly people are smiling at me or walking much slower than they were beforehand past the music.
Yeah.
It was a discovering of something within me, which, as you mentioned, poverty, this was abundance, if you like that word, because I started to feel I had a place and that I was what I loved to do was helping others. There was a convergence of love from the inside and the outside. But still, that was like the little candle flame around this big, dark space of otherwise feeling that my life was all stuck and blocked. And it gave me a focus, and it was obviously very important, but it wasn't the major shift. That kept happening little by little. Yeah. Somehow that candle just kept expanding into a vaster flame. And I don't know how it happened. You know, I just kept connecting to myself, and more amazing things would happen in my life. I'd meet more amazing people. You know, our oracle friends, whom many of the listeners will be aware of, came to me when I was playing the harp in the streets.
Yeah.
This harp that I never could have afforded with money. Like, you know, this amazing instrument that just came to me because I loved it, or loved to do things with it that benefited others. And I didn't even know how it benefited others necessarily, because I was so convinced of my own, I don't know, I was convinced that others would not hear or receive what was within me, that it was just subjective to me. And yet...
Yes, but yeah. it also feels like you were put into the situations that you needed to make your next steps. In some way, you ended
always
up there. I mean, you have tried other things, and then the roads were blocked, and maybe not a lot of choices were left, or maybe, I don't know, I mean, you already described financially, for example, there were not a lot of choices to begin with, but I do feel that you gained a trust during that journey because you ended up in situations that benefited you in some way. And then it was also you who decided to be open to what comes your way and to be also ready to receive, because I feel this is also a problem that people are actually offered gifts. And I had to go through that transformation myself in my life, that people would offer gifts and I would reject them because all I wanted to do was give. And there's an imbalance as well. There is, it's important to actually also be able to receive, you know, and accept the gifts, the non-monetary gifts, as well as perhaps the monetary ones that are being made to us. And I just want to point that out because I feel it's important. It was an important decision in the end of the day that you did accept the instrument. And I feel it was exactly the right thing to do, but not necessarily everybody would have done it for various reasons, emotional or otherwise.
Yes, you're quite right when you say no choice. And also when you say it was also kind of everything from a deep inner choice. Yes, simultaneously. There was that inner determination, desperation even, to make good of what I felt within me. To bring forth that seed that's within me, knowing that it is a very vast tree, you know, in terms of the music I want to give and other arts as well, and just anything. It's an ongoing discovery of what this life is about. But right now, music shows up as a main thing. And I know that there's a lot in me I want to give through it, many different avenues of music. And I just couldn't quite understand for a long time. I grew up around musical instruments in terms of like a keyboard and a guitar and whatever. And I made as much of those as I could, but I just kept dreaming from my earliest childhood of every exotic instrument you can imagine, of being able to like layer it all together and record. And it was just always my dream from the start, just to play. It's just playing. And of course, I can accept an instrument in that case, because, first of all, the music that is life is already playing me in that way. You know, it's pushing me to that point anyway to receive that instrument. But also, through playing the instrument, I am giving.
Yes.
It never feels like I'm just sitting and eating a box of chocolates. You know, I'm engaged in life in a way that just brings me delight. And through that, when I'm feeling that delight, somehow that travels upon the music to other people.
Yes, absolutely. It's a beautiful, it's an exchange which doesn't involve any money right there, you know. The what you have to give with the music, which is you embodying yourself really, and then the transformation that happens for another person because they are listening to the music and connect with it in their own very personal way and go on their own journey because of it, even if it's just for the few seconds they are listening. It plants a seed and it touches something, and then you know, things start to unfold from there.
Yes, it really did start to unfold from there in a way that I never could have really imagined, even though of course it's what the very essence of me desires and loves to bring into form more than anything, is to, you know, bring forth what I feel within music to share that out more. And so that does keep coming. It's been a slow, long process in some ways, but it's been certain without deviation. Only that you were saying about almost there being no choice. It was very much the case in that, you know, all of that which I called blockage beforehand was, of course, equally what channeled the water of me into reaching where I want to be.
Yeah.
It's hard to call, it's hard to describe one thing as poverty and one thing as abundance or whatever, because to me, once you finally just realize what is unfolding right now and where it can take you, and when you just connect with that, it's just a case of letting it unfold and watching it unfold.
Absolutely.
if on my way it is me and I will stay, all else will fall away. How could I know I was always in the flow? Creative joy and spark you are, designing on you. Only pain, it'll even your remain without me. Last night, designing spark you are, improving all you see.
And how did that blocking, or those blocked roads that you described, when did that stop? I mean, I have a certain idea, or I mean, it's probably not from one second to another, but I have a certain idea that at some point you got more of a feeling for yourself and for what the next step maybe needs to be, and we're not trying so many roads anymore that would be blocked because they were not the right pathway. Do you know what I mean? That when you connect more deeply with yourself, you're automatically, you hear that inner calling to certain places and certain circumstances that in some way are necessary for you, and usually in a mutual way necessary for that destination that you go to as well. And once you hear that, you may no longer try to walk towards avenues that will be blocked because they are just not in line with who you are. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does make sense. I'm laughing a little because, like, to me, the only reason the blocked avenues go away is yes, because you just stop knocking on painted doors. You know, you just go with what opens for you. But of course, in another way, yes, you're right. There is a point where you stop trying to take other roads. But again, it's all very gradual, and I can point to so many different things that helped me along that process. Externally, whether that would be through, like, you know, our friend Jacqueline, for example, majorly helping me realize what, for example, playing music could do for people, really pointing me back into myself, or systems that were helpful at certain times. You know, like next week I'm giving a human design session to someone because at one point that was very helpful for me, because it just helped me to align with how my body was already making decisions. And I kind of felt it, but had never seen it explained so clearly, you know. And when I found the parts in that human design reading, for example, that related to how I functioned, just like with someone telling me what my music's doing for them, it helps me to just settle into myself more. And of course, all of life really is doing this. It's either saying, like, giving you a green light or a red light. Funny example, because I'm colorblind, red green colorblind, but you know, I found a way to intuit what's a green and red light anyway. But yeah, everything is always shifting you towards that. It's just a case of trusting it, and in a way, I always had that trust, even when everything seemed so stuck and so dark when I was, like, you know, 20 or whatever, and felt, I almost felt like I was just, I don't know, stuck in some matrix, basically. even at those worst points, there was this little ember that was always glowing of trusting that there must be something. So to me, there's nothing, in a way, there's nothing to worry about. Of course, we worry and plan and think we're in charge, but we know also at this stage, I think many of us listening to this chat, for example, we already know that there is something in motion. And when you know what you want to bring into being, not necessarily verbally, but by feeling, you know how you want to feel, you know how you want the world to feel, more or less.
Yeah.
And you know that life itself also wants something like that, probably much better than we can comprehend. It also wants that unfolding of every potential. You don't have to try and make it work. It's already something else makes it work. And your trying is built into that as well. So
absolutely.
The knocking on the fake doors or whatever was part of that. And gradually, yes, somehow I just became more streamlined in life. Still could be a lot more efficient, I'm sure. But I just came to know myself, how I function a bit better.
And that's, I guess, what a lot comes down to. I really like how you formulated that, how you came to know how you function, because I do feel that a lot of how nature works is actually quite technical. And it has a lot to do with how this universe, how this world that we live in actually functions at a physical level, at a biological level, at all those different levels. And understanding that in whichever way it needs to be is really, really helpful. I think there is a certain feeling inside that we have when we recognize that something is the right choice, or that a place, that there's a place, a very specific place locally that we need to go to. And so much comes down to recognizing that feeling, and also the other way around. If there is something that comes into our field, but is not the choice we should be making, because that happens quite a bit too, especially in these times that all kinds of stuff comes into our field. It's something that we need to say no to. And our body is constantly telling us, because this is how we genuinely function.
Yes.
And I feel, elaborate or keep, how does that relate?
Sorry, I stopped you by saying yes, didn't I?
No, I wanted to give the word back to you anyway. I was just trying to find the right finish of my sentence. So no worries.
I realized I didn't fully answer you previously, because, of course, I pointed to these little outside pointers and helpers, sometimes big outside pointers and helpers. But, of course, again, that's just what's showing up on the external. And you touched upon what I've wanted to say just now about, of course, as we know, it's listening to yourself.
Yes.
And really deeply listening. Really going into that space where things change, which was that space that I first accessed around the time that, you know, these amazing people and instruments and opportunities came into my life, was around the same time that I just started feeling into this vast space within the heart, or seemingly within the heart, I don't know what it is, but a space that rewrites everything. Or
yeah.
Almost like it's the source of all opportunity and possibility itself. It's like going into that space already is the rewriting in process. And once you're there, things just reassemble. And it was meeting that point within. I still remember precisely the moment. And from that point, everything slowly started to change, slowly and dramatically. But sorry, I've forgotten the last things you were saying. What were you saying?
What was I saying? I have no idea.
What would you like to say now?
I think it is very important to point out how, that's what I was just thinking, how little we actually talk about money, even though this series of conversations is about reducing dependency on money. And I don't think this is a coincidence.
Well, exactly.
Yes. It has nothing to do with money. You can have a lot of money, but be very independent from money, because you're operating at a frequency setting, or at a, whatever we want to call it, where what you need comes your way, and money may be involved with that or it may not. But if it's not there, then it's not what is needed for you to make your next step. And there's that. This is where we come back to the trust. And I wanted to highlight how small the role of money actually is in that whole conversation about abundance.
Well, of course, because how can you reduce dependence on money if you're talking about money all the time?
Exactly.
It's like reducing dependency on sugar and only talking about sugar. It's like...
Very true.
You cram it out with other things in a way, don't you? Just something else that is more fulfilling, more nourishing, starts to take over. And the amazing thing for me, I guess, given this is all about, yes, trust, and it's funny, I never relate to that word abundance. I just never think of it. But of course, it is that. It's just that richness, I don't feel even has a word. You just feel it. It just becomes your life. It's like an air that you breathe. And for me, that I felt that there was never any other option for me than fulfilling this, in this case, music, but really I mean the full creativity of living. And music for me also is, to use that overused word, love. You know, I feel love when I play. And that's what draws me to any art as well, that expression of love and delight and care that you can put into something. And I knew that it was more important to me than money, always. If I had money, I would buy strings for an instrument, or I'd buy an instrument or something. If I had enough money to get by without focusing on earning a bit more money, I'd be able to record and put more music out there. And so what I'm really operating from is a very determined kind of love. I don't know how else to put it. It's because I, like a parent with a child, I want this to be nurtured. And that was, even when I thought there were no options in life, I still thought, right, if I just put all of my life's energy into squeezing out a drop of music, fine, I don't care about the rest. I can live on the streets. You know, that was my kind of idea.
Yeah, you keep pushing
idea,
through.
But, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were my, that was what mattered to me. And money was just this kind of weird, imposed alien system that I never understood, always felt excluded from. And now just seems to matter less. Of course, it's still functioning in my life. And I realize we got speaking initially to talk about my life story, and I haven't even said that I've basically left my country to move to, right now, the Pyrenees. And I'm watching a whole alternative society and way of life unfold through that process, deep in nature. In that place, I'm still using money. It's easier than it was in the UK, where I basically could not numerically, financially afford to live at that time. But maybe life was just pushing me somewhere else because I needed to be somewhere else anyway. Yeah. If I was supposed to be in the UK, I'm sure it would have worked out.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I find here, yes, I'm still using money. There's still questions about earning and money that come up. But my life, I've been given this beautiful grace, really, to not have to think about it every waking moment, and instead to be able to think about what I love to do and what I'm here to do.
Yes.
And that's, I'm still quite amazed by that, because, you know, I really wondered if it was possible sometimes, and it didn't matter, because I didn't care. I would just twist my life to be that way regardless. I would just put that music out there. But it's happening in a much easier way than I thought it would be. I thought it would be a lot harder.
It's amazing, isn't it? I feel like we will be disconnected in 3 minutes. So
okay.
Reminding me why I breathe.
So, I feel that with your move to Spain, a whole new part of your life has started to unfold. That's what I'm getting from what you have shared about this before. And I'm wondering, you also told me that you first had a lot of resistance to leaving the UK, and then eventually you decided, even though Spain was in your field for a while already, to actually make that move and go there. And I wonder, what did that change for you in terms of how you perceived your life, how you carried on making your choices from there?
What did coming here change, you mean?
What did you say?
Sorry, could you repeat your question?
Yes, I'm wondering, when you eventually follow the impulse to make that big change in your life and leave the UK with very little and go to Spain, how do you feel your life started changing, or how did your choices change, or the way you made decisions? What do you feel happened when you made that move? And I'm asking because I think a lot of people have a hard time making radical changes, but radical changes are needed in these times. And sometimes suddenly we need to be in a completely different place and around completely different people, and everything will be blocked until we finally follow that calling.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering what was that like for you?
it was my life beginning. Really, that's what it felt like. In a way, I could say that it was the same when I started playing the harp or started singing in the ashram. They were little moments of actually feeling like, oh, wow, I feel alive. And each time it's progressively stronger and more alive. But I always wanted, you say I had resistance. I did to leaving the UK, but it was a taught resistance. Like the thing, like that old image about the fleas not jumping out of the jar. You know that story? It was like that. I just didn't think to jump higher than the UK borders. I felt that I didn't have the money to live abroad. I thought that was, that it would be expensive and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I was thinking of the official channels.
Yes.
I didn't realize there were Wild West-like places, like the abandoned villages in the Pyrenees, you know, where you can actually live more on nature's foundation, not dependent upon money and all of that slow, heavy junk that comes with it of bureaucracy and paperwork and jumping through very bizarrely shaped hoops and all sorts of things. I didn't allow myself to believe that there was this other world so nearby. I had always internally longed to explore other cultures and had done internally through music and through art and through Indian spirituality. All of those things was like an immersion in other cultures. But it was the best I could do to go to an ashram in Wales, you know, only a couple of hours away from where I lived. And it's funny because, you know, the suggestion for Spain came to me kind of from nowhere to my awareness.
Yeah.
But for many years, I'd felt very at home, despite not speaking the languages. I felt quite at home in Latin cultures. I used to sing a lot of Brazilian music and a lot of medieval Italian or Galician music. And I felt a kind of affinity for the languages, but I'd never studied them. And I never thought I'd go and live in Spain. Never. But when the place was suggested to me, I thought, because of course there's always that little, it's inside all of our instructions, you know, And outside, just sometimes you're getting that reflection come from outside, and sometimes it catches light and something glints within you. And that was Spain for me and how it changed things. I mean, like, I still, even after hearing the suggestion, was like, ah, maybe in a few years, after 2027, I can go, you know, like, play the harp in a square in Spain. And, like, you know, I just did not think it as a reality. For one thing, I didn't know anyone in Spain.
Yeah.
And there's basically, there was kind of an always adventurousness within me that was checked by this poverty mindset of, oh, you can't because there's no money. And it kind of held me back for so long that by the time I finally got to go somewhere else, it was like a bow being pulled back as far as it could go. And I just went with such force into it. I loved it. But of course, I was encountering all of these poverty fears because I was, okay, just before going to Spain, sorry, I'm leaping ahead of myself. When I was still in England and had this idea to go abroad, I still thought it impractical and I was still looking for places to live within the UK, within the southwest of England, you know. All I knew that had worked, supposedly, in my life was playing harp in one place. I tried playing it in other places and I didn't like it as much and people weren't supporting it as much or it couldn't be heard over the traffic. So I felt like I had this yearning to try anything else in my life, but this kind of feeling that only one thing I'd actually experienced was giving me any sense of freedom. So that was a strange conundrum, but life basically forced me out. 2020 came. And yeah. I started having dreams of my city being submerged in a big wave. And I felt that I had to get out. But I was initially suppressing all of those and ignoring them. Because in those early 2020 months, we had this lovely spring in England. Everything was gorgeous. And there was no traffic in my town, my city, which is usually so polluted. And I was walking along the main street of my city smelling orange blossoms or something like that. And I thought, wow, this is nice. You know, I got lured into this weird trap almost. But then the dreams kept coming. And they kept saying, you know, get out, get a move on. They didn't say where to, but life had other plans, as it does when we run out of road in one place. Thank you. Initially stayed a little bit of time in Belgium because an invite came to stay there. Some people were trying out a co-living situation, and supposedly there was going to be a theme of creativity there and, you know, trying things out. But I was halfway in this stage of like knowing that another life was necessary, but still feeling that the system had a lot of control. And I guess living in Belgium, it was a place of a lot of bureaucracy, very small. I didn't feel like I could just live off the radar there.
Mm-hmm. Makes a lot and of sense.
Because, of course, you know, when you don't actually have much physical money, the way to live legally in a place usually involves a lot of money. And I didn't have those options, which was one of the main reasons I never thought living abroad would be possible. But when I was in that experimental place in Belgium, through there, I received the contact of someone who lived in Spain. And I sent them a message one day, and I received photos of their garden. And this was probably the first time I'd actually seen Spanish nature, you know, those colors that you get further south that you don't get in, say, you know, the north of Europe. And something about it was really pulling me towards it. But even then, I was thinking, okay, maybe one day. If it's right, it'll happen. And I made zero effort to go towards it. I sent the occasional message to this person whom I didn't know.
Yeah.
I only knew through pictures of their garden, you know. And I ended up back in the UK after Belgium. Staying in little rooms in other people's houses, like dwindling options materially.
Yeah.
And finally, it reached the point where I was desperately looking for places to live in the UK still. And nothing seemed to be working. And I was like contemplating homeless services and that kind of thing, but I did not want to go down that route. And just at the moment, I finally found a good house share and someone was accepting or saying, inviting me into it. Suddenly, the person in Spain got in touch and said, you know, where are you? Come and visit. And I checked at that moment and suddenly all of the travel restrictions, which were keeping me from even considering Spain, were lifted only for British tourists, only in that moment. I'm talking like the window of like 2 weeks. Where suddenly there were no tests needed to get on a plane. Because this, of course, was 2021, you know, when everything was still very tightly controlled. And I thought, this is too good to be true. And I just had this big sort of momentary panic and decided, right, I'm doing this. And curiously, I looked at the map of Spain whilst I was doing this. And this place was down in Alicante, in the southeast of the country. But curiously, I was hovering over the names on the map around the Pyrenees of Zaragoza, Huesca, and I felt really drawn to them. Something was resonating in the words to me.
Yeah, something was
already
calling.
But I made no thought about it. Sorry. Yeah.
No, I was just saying something was already calling.
Exactly. And by this time, I'd already had dreams of people who I would then meet in Spain, in the UK, before I went there.
Yeah.
And basically at every stage, the dreams also were kind of showing me where to go long before I had any clue of how to do it. I say to people, I wouldn't have been intelligent enough to end up here. Yeah. Like, it feels that way. It feels like I was just sort of picked up and placed here.
Yes. I often have similar experiences. First of all, it's important to point out how you again recognized that moment in which the calling happened, where you really needed to take action, because you said the window was very small. And I think this is often the case in these times. A change needs to happen, the window opens, but if we do not move towards it, it closes again, and that was it. And then, of course, nature still finds your way, but that window is closed. And
yes,
I think it's really important for people to realize that and to maybe just be more open to finding that in their own being, the recognition of that calling towards whatever it is, whatever the next step needs to be. It can be a location, it can be a person, it can be anything. And I'm also really, really excited about this, the dreams and how they have been leading you, because as far as I understand, they never give you full information. It's glimpses of a person here, a place there, often without actually really knowing where it is and when it comes. But yet these dreams seem to be one way of how nature really genuinely speaks to you, because a lot of it, a lot of what you dream is what you later on encounter in your life in some way. So there's a reality to it. And there seems to be a connection between choices, between those dreams and choices that you actually need to make, which is very fascinating.
Yes, very much so. I'm very studious about them. I try and record whatever I see or hear in dream. But yes, they work in a kind of riddle. They're very fun. I find them very enjoyable. Maybe that's why it happens that way. I don't know, because it forces me to think, it forces me to listen, and it gives me some very creative, intelligent approaches to things. So I enjoy it. I don't know why it happens that way for me, that a lot of things come to me in dream and vision, but they do. But I have to work for it every time. Pretty much nothing is laid out straightforward and direct. Unless it's something I really have to pay attention to. And even then, it'll still often work symbolically, but in a symbol that I understand immediately.
Yeah.
It's forced me to learn my own language, my own inner language, which also means by default that you start dropping outer languages, because I'm listening to my own framework. And that has no relevance outside. There's nothing outside that can help me to understand inside. But just wanted to say something else you said before you mentioned dream. You said about these windows opening very briefly and having to take that decision. Yes, of course, that is the case. But to me, I think if as long as you are listening to yourself, you cannot miss it.
Mm-hmm, exactly. A good point.
And you're automatically taking it.
Yes.
And you know, I say that, and even then I wonder, because I felt like I wasn't fully listening to myself many times over. I was in touch with that inner silent space in a kind of almost a bare minimum way, you know, a few seconds here and there every day, maybe. And of course, playing music and whatever helped me to feel myself more. But I really felt like a lot of the times I was ignoring all the cues, and still life made me see it and brought me towards it. And so I don't even know whether we have to worry about missing an opportunity.
Yeah.
Something will always come anyway.
Yes, everything readjusts, absolutely. Yeah. It's very interesting you're pointing this out, because it happened a couple of times to me that I knew very specifically that I had to go somewhere at a certain point in time, and was very conscious even before I left that there was only a small window and a very specific way in which I needed to move. But from what I'm hearing, you are saying that this was not necessarily the case for you. You were not necessarily aware that there was only a very small window, or you're even listening very deeply to yourself.
I had no idea. I wasn't looking at the travel news for Spain. I really had written off the idea. I had just put it in the back of my head and thought, right, if it's important, it'll happen.
Cool.
And what happens? It was important. It's really funny. But no, I did not have that kind of direct, instant awareness that you've said about having, or you seem to have, where you just immediately know, right here, I'm going to go this way. Sometimes maybe that is switching on for me, or maybe I do have that and just I'm not so aware of it. But for me, it usually comes through image and symbol, and I don't know why.
It's just a different way, it seems, and it's fascinating, because I do believe even though nature functions in quite specific ways, there is still a lot of diversity, and we are not, even when we are fully embodying ourselves or hear nature in a very effortless way, we are not all functioning. It doesn't happen for all of us in this to the same way of perceiving nature, for example. And I feel that this diversity is also, it's very exciting. And I don't even know if anything needs to switch on in you.
We'll find out. Yes, the diversity is brilliant and so fun and so much more like real life to me than these staid and boring old, you know, prescribed ways of saying, like, you know, you have a purple seventh chakra up here and you have a blue whatever chakra in whatever part, and everyone functions this way. And just like, no, we don't. We're so vividly unique, you know, or ideally should be, and
absolutely
will become so when we listen to that uniqueness within us and stop looking for some formulaic answer outside. And I guess while I was never interested in there being something formulaic, I was still in my past looking for some kind of generic solution or whatever in spirituality, or I don't know. But the way to even get to those fake ideas was by listening to myself and going in, and they brought me to what was more real. So nothing was wasted necessarily. Although we can think that way. Sorry, what did you say before? There was something else.
I was saying that we function in very different ways. And there's a lot of diversity, even though nature as such has a very specific way. It's actually very difficult to put this into words, because I feel it's both at the same time. There is a lot of diversity, and yet everything comes down to the same simple principles. Just the way these simple principles work through us is different for every single person.
Yes, and that was also what part of being tilted into Spain by life kind of helped me to see even more as well, because I'd already led quite an unusual life, I guess, with my inner pursuits and everything, you know.
Yes.
But coming here, it was the first time I was really standing up on my own feet as well. Even though, of course, at the same time, I was dependent upon the generosity of people around me, or those amazing coincidences that happen more and more and more in my life, where the right person shows up at the right time and you're doing the right thing in the right place and you had no idea, unless a dream tells you beforehand and gives you a hint. And so, you know, like I came here basically as a volunteer, as a workaway type of person. And that's kind of a joke to me. I was almost worried about repeating old patterns, like in the monastery, which was very, very about work, because I have very short sight. And I have hypermobile joints, which make me basically not a very efficient farm laborer, not a very useful, you know, carrier of heavy objects back and forth every day for six dependable hours of work. I am not built for that. I'm built like a harpist. And to arrive in a place where I felt that I would be dependent upon basically work contracts, unwritten work contracts with people, was quite a leap. You know, it was exciting, and I kind of felt like, well, it's here or nothing anyway, so I'll just roll with whatever happens.
But
it was still forcing me to reappraise everything, every moment, and just basically keep alert to the present moment and see what unfolds, because I had no sense of security. Which, of course, is always a false image anyway, probably, until it's security within our own selves.
Yes, exactly.
Of our own path.
Exactly. Otherwise, it's all rooted in thought, and we know where that comes from, and it's just not what we are. It's fascinating how all of this has been coming together for you, and how it all connects to reduce dependency on money, and how it keeps coming back to that openness. I think this is really what I'm pointing out a lot, and what I'm hearing a lot in your journey. There was a genuine openness to a path or to a new happening that did not necessarily logically make sense.
Not at all.
But it felt right at a different level, at a body level, at a level of your whole being. And this is something I have personally experienced over and over all the time. These times of transformation require steps which we would never be able to come up with this in our minds. And they often do not make logical sense beforehand. And as long as we try to move by figuring out what the future will bring, by taking past experiences and ideas and projecting those onto the future and try to move with some sort of sense of security that we get out of those past experiences, it will never work. And I think this is really something I want to point out, because it's very, very strong in my life too, that most of the moves I have to make and I feel in my body I have to make do not make sense logically. And the mind of course comes in and says, oh, this is all wrong. But there is a much stronger voice underneath, which is not even a voice. It's something else. It's our whole being really communicating with us in very diverse ways, as we just pointed out. And it's important to be open to that. And I hear this openness a lot. And I'm wondering how to sort of maybe also start wrapping this up. What really is abundance for you now? Or you said you're not really drawn towards that word so much, or maybe I should phrase it differently. Like, how do you feel? What do you think people need to have their needs met?
Well, if I could just backtrack a little to fill in the narrative gap.
Absolutely.
Yes, the options make very little logical sense. But I felt like, well, there's nothing else to do. May as well give it a go. It'll be exciting if nothing else. I knew by this point, but no one else knew. And I didn't know what I knew. I just knew that I was going to be here and had to be here. And somehow, through doing all of those things, like, you know, helping garden in a place, not things I'm necessarily very well built for, although I can do a bit of gardening, I had uncertainty about how to proceed further. Okay, I'd landed in Spain, but what next? Now I'm living in someone's house and gardening. Can't speak the language, don't really know anyone, even the person I'm staying with, I've only just met. What now? And I actually spoke with a very perceptive, very dear friend of mine, and they just said, do jobs for people, but always play. People will realize they need you. And I just kept going forward, not sometimes knowing what the step in front of me would be, but just reaching out my foot and, oh, there's something there. And I'd keep doing this and I would play.
stitches pouring out of dreams. Reminding me why I breathe.
Give and breathe.
Great forest. Days like you drops on a leaf, running down my cheek, years without name. All the shells are the colors of the meadow, raindrops on my pillow. Find me if I reach a little wrong, following my flame.
And where I now live in the Pyrenees, that came by surprise, came in dream first, but I didn't know much about it because the dreams were in a riddly kind of way that didn't reveal their destination until I was already here. And then I'm living in a place where if you want to live somewhere, you move into a ruin and you put the roof on it. And if you need heat, you chop the wood and you get the fire going. And if you want to... Okay, that's one place where I'm living. I'm between two places right now. I'm one place that's really on the frontier, you know, right in completely off the grid.
Yeah.
And the other place that I live in where I can record my music and have interviews with people is halfway. It's a reoccupied village in this abandoned countryside. But people have moved in and built it up and there's a bit of electricity and stuff like that now. And I'm paying a little rent to live in this little place. And it's much cheaper than anything in England. And it's just about sustainable with the way I'm living right now. For yeah. now. I know it's probably temporary, but it's working.
Yeah.
And yeah, I move between these two places. The place on the frontier is incredible because it really is just a case of, but even in this village where I am, there's this freedom which I never experienced in my home country. If I want to plant some potatoes, I ask the neighbours and they say, oh, yeah, just take that corner of the field there. And then it's like, oh, wow, okay. And I have some potatoes to plant. And then it's like, there's some horse manure in the forest right next to it. I'll go and gather that up and put it on the potatoes. And so there's options for everything. There's even options to be practical and to be self-sufficient. But of course, self-sufficiency isn't even all of it. You know, instead, I'm focusing on my music mainly. I'm just doing that, playing in public fiestas, playing for the people I meet. And it really is happening, just as that friend of mine said, that my life is unfolding through what I love to do, as long as I prioritize that. And yeah. listen to myself always. And as I keep going along this path, not knowing, not having a clue, apart from these inscrutable dreams, I just keep going forward and things keep arriving. And it's more and more, everything has more and more momentum. I've now finally released an EP of music, which I spent years trying to get something out there. And each time there'd be some blockage. And now it's just all flowing, little by little, poco a poco, as they say here. But it's flowing. It's begun. And I feel like my life has begun. And I'm just...
It's beautiful.
I'm in awe. I'm in awe of how it happens.
Yes, absolutely. It's very, very beautiful. And even in that flow of what you were saying, now you already answered the question that I had asked earlier. So... Wow, yeah, it's an amazing journey. And just before we finish, another thing that I can very much relate to as well is that everything at the moment is temporary. I have the same experiences. I go to places, I feel like there's something inside me which is still sometimes insecure, and it always wants long-term stability. But yes, this is just too, not, right? yes, but it's
still
is just,
there.
It's there, exactly, but its voice is getting quieter and quieter, and I feel like this is just not what is happening in these times. And it's okay, because we are absolutely ready to deal with the instability that we are seeing on the outside, that is unfolding in our lives, and that is happening on the inside as well. It's a time of transformation. It's intense, but there are also the most beautiful possibilities unfolding in the middle of all this.
Yes.
And almost effortless ways to go through it, if we go through these times, if we are ready to be open and spontaneous and to move when we need to move, whatever that means in a certain situation.
It's indescribably, inconceivably beautiful for me. I'd always had these dreams of a very beautiful, amazing future, and the dreams would be trying, almost struggling to convey with the mechanism of dream how amazing and open things will be, how fluid they'll be. I could feel them even when I was receiving these dreams, that they were kind of pushing at their limits to be able to describe what's coming if you open to it. But it is you, so of course you're going to open to it, because you are yourself opening at that moment. You're flowering.
Yeah.
I had one little dream vision recently in the summer where I was this space, I was this area in which water was flowing. I was the flow of the water, although of course I was not the water, because it's just this movement. I was this movement, and gradually this very small trickle of water was just expanding until it was like a dam being burst. And then eventually it was like this whole vast, wide river in full motion.
Wow.
And the feeling of freedom that this little vision was giving me was just like, this is what's happening.
Yes.
It's little by little, but the momentum just keeps building. And so soon it's actually like vastness by vastness. And of course, still there is that person watching all this happening, that voice going, you know, like, well, what about the next step? Okay. All the last million steps have worked, but what about this one? What about, you know, but it's just irrelevant. And like you say, that voice just gets quieter and quieter. And that person is the backseat passenger anyway, being driven to a brilliant destination. It just doesn't seem to realize it. And yeah, well, the passenger disappears, but you know, like.
I understand. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. I would say that was a beautiful way to wrap up. And are you happy with that? Do you feel like we have reached some sort of completion?
Yes, I think so.
Okay, well, then I hope you enjoy this conversation when you listen to it. Thank you for being open to this topic of reducing dependency on money, and thank you to you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Owen. Yeah, obviously for being ready to do this. And it was a lovely conversation. I absolutely enjoyed it.
Yes, thank you for thinking of it. The all the things you're doing on the Sunbeings website, you and Kate as well. It just seems really positive, really what's needed. More of this. And it's been really fun to speak with you, and I'm sure we shall keep in touch.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
First morning of sunlight, first question, who are you?
Who are you? Who are you? Who are you?
I ask the rising fire.
There was no reply.
There was no reply.
The colors spilled over the page of the sky.
The colors spilled over.
Raindrops on my pillow. Feathers in the meadow. Oh,
soft touch of a stormy sky, sea spray of a summer dawn, kiss open my eyes.
With the lips of rose and dew alight,
heart dawn,
anoints the morn with jasmine
to touch the light reborn.
Sing me my love.
Like water.